Welcome to the SOAP video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We are working through our fall reading plan in 2021, and we are in the book of Nehemiah.
Ooh.
And we're in week 3 of 4, and we're going to start skipping a few things. We've read everything so far, but this week and next we'll skip a few things.
Yeah, a bunch of names.
Lists of names and numbers and stuff. Feel free to read them. Yeah. We're not saying you can't read them, but we won't be commenting on them other than saying it's a list of names and numbers that you can feel free to read.
Right. You know, it is kind of funny because when you think of Nehemiah, the first thing you think about is the wall, you know, and building the wall. It was chapter 3.
Yeah.
Right? There's 13 chapters.
And
so there's a lot more to there's a lot more to this guy.
Yeah, but he keeps coming back to it. I mean, we're in we're starting in chapter 6. And we finally get to the line, and the wall was complete.
Right.
Except for the gates and the doors and all this other stuff. So I think
that's a typical guy. Right? Typical guy, right? Oh, it's done. The wall is done.
Yeah, well,
the doors don't count, but the wall's done.
The wall's done. So we're in, we're finishing up chapter 6. We're going to hit some verses at the beginning and end of chapter 7. All of chapter 8. And start chapter 9 this week. Right. Most of chapter 7 we're going to skip.
Good.
So where are we at?
Yeah, so you know, we talked about the wall and everything and how, you know, that is the big thing. And it really was the big thing.
Yeah.
But last week we also found that there was another big issue that happened. And this issue sure seemed like it happened before Nehemiah got there and it had been wider spread. And that is, there seemed to be maybe a famine in the area, or maybe the extra people that came back, but there wasn't enough food to support the people there. And it got to the point where the poorer class, who was always the first to recognize the problems, needed to sell things. For basic necessities, even up to and including kids and themselves too.
And under the Mosaic law, God had actually created a system for that.
Right.
You know, we have a particular view of slavery here in the 21st century that does not accurately reflect what God had set up. God said slavery was okay under certain circumstances.
Right.
Okay. And that's the disconnect. Yeah. Right. So they were allowed to sell themselves, sell their families into slavery for the purpose of paying off a debt. That was the only reason it was supposed to.
And that was it, right?
They
were, no, but they were, the debt was, I need money to live.
Right, right. So you take, you know, to take care of us, you know, we'll work for you, you know, if you take care of us. Not unlike an employee-employer relationship today, right?
Right.
Except they sold their entire family sometimes, you know, into slavery. Right. Well, sometimes they would sell their land too, right? They sell their land. So two things. Every 50th year, the Jubilee year, which was 7 sevens plus the 1 year, all land was supposed to be returned. This is what God determined, said.
Right.
All land was supposed to be returned to its previous or original owner.
So what does that really mean? The one who owned it 50 years ago, or just the family name?
The family name.
Right.
Right, the family name. Because the tribes were not allowed to expand and contract property-wise, and family clans would never then lose their inheritance and lose their, you know, whatever.
Right.
So if I had to sell my family into slavery, and there were 30 years left before the Jubilee, the 50th year, and I had kids during that time, they were still heirs of a piece of property that I had sold. Or let's say I didn't sell my family, but I had to sell property. Yeah. They were still heirs of a piece of property. And at the Jubilee year, we would get it back as a family. And all debts would be erased and canceled. All slaves would be set free. It was the Jubilee year.
Yeah.
And then the 50 would start over again.
A little different than today.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Right. Now, God said this is how slaves were supposed to be treated and all that.
Right.
Now, one more thought. While we're here and I'm on a roll.
Yep.
If I had sold myself into slavery or my family into slavery and said, man, I really like this person, this master. I can't imagine doing life on my own now, having, right. you know, with this right. generous person's whatever. I could actually enter into a contract with them, a binding, never to be released. This would be the one time that the Jubilee didn't change it, where I would bond myself to that master, and I would become a bond slave or a bond servant. And that would be perpetual. I'm signing my life over into their hands, so where you're my master forever. Interesting fact, in the New Testament, that's the concept that Paul uses when he calls himself a bond servant of Christ.
Okay. Yeah. So we have these Jews, the Israeli nation. We know Nebuchadnezzar came in, you know, Babylon, Persia, Syria, you know, everybody's beating on them. But were they able to, do their religious studies?
Oh, in captivity, in exile? Captivity. Yeah. Yeah, actually, they could. God was sending prophets. So Ezekiel, for instance, was taken in the second captivity, the second Babylonian captivity, 597. So he was actually in there as a captive in the tents or whatever they had, getting messages from God, talking, yeah. presenting. So they had the law, they had prophets. And it was during this time that the first synagogue was created. The word synagogue is a Greek word that just means to gather together, a gathering place,
right?
Church building, you know, right. whatever. And so they would gather it because they didn't have a temple. They're not doing certain sacrifices. They're not able to keep up with some of the aspects of the law. But on the Sabbath, this is where the concept of the Sabbath as a day of worship comes from. It was never like that before the exile. It was a day of rest. Not a day of worship. There was no church services. They didn't, but what they did during the exile, what they started doing was on the Sabbath, they would gather together in their community, listen to part of the law be read,
right.
pray, and then go back home.
Okay. So the reason why that's a big deal is the law is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, in our reading, chapter, in our reading yeah. this week. And so the question really is, you know, is this the first time they heard the law? And it's not.
Yeah, right? Most of them, it would not have been. No. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. So back to, you know, where we started with. So we find that the walls rebuilt. Nehemiah, there was issues with the rich against the poor. Nehemiah did his best to settle that. There was a public meeting. Not that it was against the Mosaic law and all the way, but there had to be some concessions that had to be made.
Right.
Right. So there was some agreement and they're able to move forward.
Yep.
Now you would think, okay, Nehemiah's done, but he stays.
Yep.
Right. And so that's kind of cool. And in fact, there's already been at least two plots against him.
Yeah.
Right. And the ones that you liked where the bad guys are trying to lure him out and he's yep. like, I'm doing important work. I can't leave. And then there was another plot to just basically discredit him with fake news.
Right.
Oh, he's trying to become king. You guys really want to put up with this? He's taking over everything. Yep. But then there was a third plot that happened.
Yeah.
And this came from internal, from the Jews,
yeah.
which made it different.
Yeah.
In there. And this man, actually, did they even name the family? They said from his house, I yeah. think. And he was confined to his home, right? So that says one of two things. Either he would have been under arrest and a house arrest, which didn't seem likely because the governor's visiting him.
Yeah.
Or he was maybe ceremonially unclean.
Or sick and had
to
or
be
something.
Yeah, or sick, right? And had to be in his house, right? And he said, they're coming for you. You should go hide in the temple.
Yeah.
And Nehemiah didn't take the bait. And he recognized that it was a trap. And the deal is, Nehemiah wasn't allowed in certain spots in the temple.
Right.
And this is where the guy was telling him to go. So the idea was somebody that didn't belong would be in the temple, and they would then be disgraced.
Yeah. And what we find out later on then is that, you know, our good friend Sanballat and Tobiah, yeah. Tobiah actually was had somebody from the Jewish leadership or the whatever was married to Tobiah's family. So
right.
there's this, they had it says that they had pledged themselves to him, right?
Yeah.
So there's letters which going is the back problem. And forth. Yeah, right.
Right. And why, yeah. And whether God made rules.
Well, yeah, and that's the right. thing is that they, during this time, somewhere during this time, before Nehemiah got there, I assume, they had said, all right, we'll follow you, Tobiah, if you take care of us, protect us. And then Nehemiah comes in and says, God will protect you. Let's do what God says. And Tobiah's over here saying, hold on a second. I'm starting to yep. lose control.
Yep.
And they're inside Jerusalem saying, but we can't tell Nehemiah that we're friends with right. this guy. And
right.
so there's, it's sort of like, there's that picture three people on a couch, right? And two people, you know, the guy in the middle thinks that he's dating, you know, the one side. You know, yeah. And behind him, you know, they're holding hands or something because it's the two on, you know, the yeah. enemies, you know, type, or the, right. they should have been enemies, but they were friends. And Nehemiah thought that he was friends.
He was, man. Right. When he didn't think he was.
When he didn't think he was. And all of a sudden, this stuff starts bubbling up.
Yep. So what's Nehemiah do? He puts people that he knows and trusts in a leadership position.
Yeah.
Right? So he puts his brother in charge of the the gatekeeper, chief gatekeeper, and another guy in charge of the citadel.
Yeah.
Right? And then a cool thing happens. They figure out, we don't have enough people living here. So we have this protected area. We have these gates. We open these gates in the morning. All these people from the outside come in. They could easily take us over.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's some rules that are put in place to limit the number of people that come in or the times.
Right.
To lock down the temple before the gates are open.
Because people had moved back to Israel and now they want to go back to their land.
Right.
Their property. Right. So, okay, great. I helped rebuild Jerusalem, but I'm actually from, you know, Galilee. I'm from the north. I'm from one of the northern tribes. So I've helped, but I don't live here.
Yeah.
I want to get my farm going. I want to get my business back running. It's time to go home.
Right.
And Nehemiah is looking around like,
Yeah. So he finds some records. Right? So in my mind, these records say who owns what.
Yeah.
Right. And so the appropriate families can come back.
Yep.
Now, we don't even know if there's houses there. Right? The walls were torn down. You got to imagine a number of the houses were torn down or hadn't been lived in. And,
right.
You know, so it's not like you get a free mansion.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Although the people who, there were people there and, you know, they were working on the wall up opposite their house or whatever.
Right. So there were
But it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't this, you know, a million people in thriving, bustling city. Yeah. It's like, okay, this is still a little.
Well, and we find out Zerubbabel brings back 50,000.
Yeah.
So there was like 50,000 people there, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, right, right.
Know, some would have left, some more would have come.
Yeah, right. Ezra brought back some, mostly priests and Levites, though, people that actually helped with the temple service.
Do we know how many Nehemiah brought back?
I don't remember right. I don't remember right off, and I
didn't see a list so far.
Yeah.
Well, there is a list.
Yeah.
And it's important to note that list is Zerubbabel,
right?
Not Nehemiah.
Right. The list in chapter 7 is Zerubbabel from 539.
Yep.
But now we're in 444, and yeah, like you said, 100 years later, you know, some of these people are dead. A lot of these people are probably dead by now.
Right.
So what's happened to the? Right. So chapter 8, I want to jump ahead to chapter 8.
No, that's fine.
Chapter 8 is really that.
That's
it's
the
sort
cool
of
thing.
Like the focal point, like the fulcrum of the whole thing, right? We've been building up to this. Finally, the wall is done, 52 days. Then we've got this huge worship service, really, in a sense.
Yeah.
And then things will, you know, other things will happen. And we haven't even gotten to the dedication yet.
Right? Well, but it seems like they're returning to God.
Yeah.
Right, and if you think about it, God kicked them out.
Yeah.
Right, and they were out, they were gone. They made a decision to go back, so they went back. They built the temple. You know, it wasn't enough. They built the walls, and it wasn't enough. You know, they're trying to do more, and now it is they're literally coming back to God.
Yeah. And the thing, and chapter 8, verse 1 says, when the seventh month arrived, the seventh month is really important on the Jewish calendar. You've got, they had two calendars going on, and one was a civil calendar, one was the sacred calendar. So the seventh month of the sacred calendar was the same as the first month of the civil calendar. They were six months opposite.
Okay.
So the first day of the seventh month is the new year on the civil calendar,
right.
Rosh Hashanah. Okay, the new year. The seventh month also, on the 10th day, is Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. Right. And then on the 15th day, there's the week of the Feast of the Tabernacles, what today we call Sukkot. Yeah, that's the Hebrew word for tents or tabernacles.
And all those come in chapter 8.
Well,
except Yom Kippur doesn't.
Except Yom Kippur doesn't, yeah. Which really surprised me, because they make such an effort to, oh no, we're supposed to be living in temporary shelters, these Sukkot, these tents, and celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. That's great. But what about the Day of Atonement?
Right.
How does the Day of Atonement not get not get mentioned here? That's
it is okay. Good. I'm glad you said that, because I think I had it in here. I was going to ask you about it.
that's one of my two big takeaways. The from chapter 8 is I'm not sure why that's missing. There may be a good reason, and I just haven't looked into it. But that seems like it would be a big day.
Right.
If they're coming back to God, the Day of Atonement.
Right. So the people come. Ezra is up on a platform of some kind. He's reading the law. There's other Levites there.
Yeah.
There seems to be a translation that has to happen,
yep.
And explanation too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, literally, he's reading. They're in Hebrew, directly from Hebrew.
Right. And then he would stop at some point and wait for them to translate.
Yep. Either that, or they would be doing it in time. You know, maybe some of their people who don't understand Hebrew and we're off over here, and they're translating for them. But then there's also exposition going on, interpretation, teaching. Okay, what does this mean?
Right.
What are we supposed to do about
it? So they're going from Hebrew to Aramaic?
Probably Aramaic, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That would have been the common Semitic language outside of Israel. So they would have picked that up while they were there. In fact, in the King James Version, the King James Bible, in the book of Daniel, he was taught the language of the Chaldeans. That's Aramaic. So that's what they were speaking. But similar to Hebrew, it's a Semitic language. There's a lot of overlap, but enough differences that if you could sort of understand Hebrew, but not enough that you'd want to rely on that if you're learning the law or having the law read.
Okay. So then it says people were weeping.
Yeah.
And the Levites and Ezra were saying, no. This is a day of joy, not of weeping.
Yep.
But I think emotionally, first time being reconnected to a God that they haven't been literally connected to in generations.
Yeah.
Is huge.
Well, also it just struck me, this would have been the first time that the law was read again, for these people at least, in the temple in a rebuilt Jerusalem. This is like they're seeing prophecy being fulfilled.
Yeah.
I will return you, I'll bring you back, the law will be read here again, and they're living history,
and
living prophecy.
And it is.
Yeah.
How cool is that? So they read the law, and as you said, they discovered that they need to go live in tents for a while. So they did it for the first time since Joshua?
Yeah.
Which, that's a whole lot of time.
That's a lot of time. Because Joshua, let's say it's about 1,000 years, because it was about 1440 about 1400 that Joshua came into the land of Canaan. The Israelites moved into the land. So from 1400 to 444, I mean, you're talking about 1,000 years.
Yeah.
But they moved in. I mean, it's sort of understandable. They moved into the land of Canaan. They built their houses. They did all their stuff. They got comfortable. Why do you need to go camping in the backyard a week every year? You know, some people like that.
Yeah.
But, but as a nation, and some people probably did, but as a nation as a whole, they had gotten comfortable for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, but the whole point of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles was to remind them of God's provision while they were in the wilderness, because that's when they were living in tents and God took care of them. And so he said, even when you go into the land and you have your houses and you have your vineyards and you have all your stuff, go camp in the backyard for a week once a year to remember where this came from.
Yeah.
And they forgot.
Right. So we get into chapter 9. We are just verses 1 through 12 only. And it's, we seem to be 2 days later. And the people are seem to be contemplating the law. And I didn't know if the Day of Atonement
would have been before Feast of Tabernacles.
Okay.
Feast of Tents.
Because so, they're dressed in sackcloth.
Yeah.
Right? And putting ashes on their head, which... Yeah. Kind of shows where their heart really is,
yep.
Which I think is pretty cool.
So it's possible that they did it out of order a little bit. I seem to remember something, and I don't remember if it's in Nehemiah now or if it's somewhere else, where they did celebrate Yom Kippur out of order, off time. Yeah, maybe that's coming up later. I don't remember. It's not in.
I think in one of the Chronicles or Kings went through, they
did it because out of order. It was.
But they hadn't done it in so long, and they found it. So hey, we're doing it.
Yeah, yeah, and there was a justifiable reason God allowed it, you know. But then after Tabernacles, you said 2 days later. So after Tabernacles was over, they moved back into their homes, or maybe they stayed out there on their sackcloth and they're, you know, really, like you said, contemplating. The rest of chapter 9 is just, you know, here's the history. Here's our history. Jews love to recount history.
Yeah.
For
as bad as they were, God's faithful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, how cool is that?
And so we just get into that a little bit this week. You know, next week we'll finish chapter 9. But it's just a good reminder, even to us reading it, just a good reminder of who God is, how faithful he's been to these people. They were remembering that.
Right. So that's what everybody's going to read this week. Next week, you're making everybody read 4 chapters, every word. No. next week, it sounds like a lot, but
yeah,
we're skipping a lot of it.
Yeah, finishing chapter 9, only the second part, the end of chapter 10, skipping 11 and 12, and then hitting 13.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing, just lists of names and stuff. But for this week... I would say especially focus on chapter 8 the response and just how it all works together.
But it seems like that's why Nehemiah stayed, right? He was a Jew. They want to come back. He wanted to be part of that. He was using his skills and leadership to navigate, and really help his nation out. To get to a point where, the priests could now take over and bring everyone back.
Well, here's a little spoiler. Nehemiah's not going to stay. He goes back to Persia for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
And then he comes back.
But he's kind of done, right?
We'll see that next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll see that next time. He thought he was done.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Right. Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of this one. Hopefully you enjoy... Not just the, here's what's in the reading, but also just the thought process and some of the big picture stuff behind this. As we're trying, we build our theologies in our minds, our systematic theologies, when we see the Bible coming together. So when we talk about things about, well, this is what was allowed in the law and not allowed in the law, it's not necessarily in Nehemiah, but that really helps with the understanding of the passage. So we hope that you appreciate that. And keep coming back for more. Share these with your friends and family, those who you think will benefit from them as well. And we'll see you back here as we finish up Nehemiah next time.
Bye, everyone.